Hello, you wonderful woman. Welcome to the Love is Coming podcast. I'm your host, Persia Lawson, one of the UK's most successful love coaches, according to the Times magazine, and author of the book, Love is Coming. It's my mission through this podcast to help single women, specifically female leaders, get powerful, soul-expanding relationships that revolutionize your growth, impact, and happiness during your time on planet Earth. Let's get straight to it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. The very special episode, Love is Coming Live, which will later become an episode of my top three ranked podcast, Love is Coming. So for anyone who is currently tuning in live on the Zoom, we are recording this mid-January 2024. You may well be listening to this in maybe a decade time. Who knows? But for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm Persia Lawson. I'm a dating and relationship coach and three-time author, and I specialize in getting career-focused women healthy, exciting, meaningful relationships that will force for good, not drama. So in this very exciting segment that we introduced towards the end of last year, I am joined by incredible guest experts who are live audience here on Zoom, get the opportunity to ask questions to directly. And today, we have my brilliant friend, the self-image specialist, Laura Phelan, with us. Laura, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Excited to be here.
Absolute pleasure having you here. So for anyone tuning in, whether live or later on a podcast episode, if you are in a space in your life and in your love life where you're just kind of sick, you're sick of modern dating, you're sick of relationships, it feels like a depressing numbers game, it feels really overwhelming, you've lost your mojo for it, and you want to actually start enjoying the process of dating and romance again, you are in the right place. Laura is going to be sharing her top tips and tools to help rebrand you in your love life and make romance fun again. So just a little bit more about Laura before we hear from the lovely lady herself. Laura is a therapeutic coach. She's worked for years in Harley Street as a disordered eating and self-image specialist. And today, Laura helps ambitious and visionary individuals get clarity on what they want in their lives to be building a strong self-image so they excel in their careers and personal lives. So Laura, before we get to you, Laura, 1 minute. So just for our lovely live audience, just so you know what to expect, Laura and I will chat for a bit and then you will get the opportunity to ask Laura any questions you have directly. So do get thinking because we are very lucky to have this time with her and it will fly by. So Laura, let's just go straight to basic bitch 101.
Love that. Okay?
This is my favorite place to start all conversations, basic bitch 101. Yeah. What on earth is the concept of self-image and why is it important, specifically when it comes to romance?
Love that question. And interestingly, this came to me even more clearly than normal yesterday when I was with a client, because I think self-image for me is the umbrella of how we feel about ourselves. It's our entire sense of self. So I think often in the health and well-being space, we see a lot around our body image. We see a lot around our relationship with food. We see a lot around boundaries, our attachment styles, love and relationships, confidence. But our self-image really makes up who we are as a person, as an individual. So it's our beliefs, our mindsets, our thoughts and perceptions of ourselves. And your self-image basically impacts how you then show up in the world and your relationships. So if you think about trying to build a relationship, whether that is romantically or in friendships, but for the purpose of tonight, we're talking specifically about romance. Having a strong relationship with yourself is the number one foundation in my world to be able to see that happening in your love life, because how you feel in yourself impacts the people that you have in your life, how you show up in your relationships, and allows you to become the magnet for the kind of relationships that you actually desire and deserve.
Absolutely. One of my favorite quotes that really links to this is from the late, great Dr. Wayne Dyer, who said that we don't attract who we want, we attract who we are. So what I used to think that meant, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I used to think that meant, so if I'm a jealous person, I'm going to attract a jealous person. What I actually learned is I'm not going to attract a jealous person. I'm going to attract someone who triggers the shit out of me, my jealousy.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. It's like people can also only meet us where we're at, and it's about what we're used to, right? So if our relationship with ourselves is based on constantly seeking validation, we're actually going to probably attract someone who perhaps doesn't give us that so that we can constantly seek it because that's what we're used to. So we often end up, don't we, going for the opposite because our nervous system wants the thing that our inner child is trying to get, which is really where that having that strong sense of self changes that, because you learn to give to yourself what you're constantly seeking from other people, and it becomes a partnership and a relationship as opposed to you guys in this dance of trying to fulfill something that you can't even fulfill within yourself.
Yeah, they call it the codependence.
Yeah.
The codependent waltz, because, and I know you love a dancing yourself, but it really is. It's like, yeah, you're trying to get this thing.
Yeah.
I've heard it said, and I love this expression, going to the butchers for bread. Like, you're going to someone who is not able to give you the thing you want. Yeah. They're just not able to.
Yeah, literally that.
Yeah, and it keeps you stuck in this, like, literally, like, you know, you can't win. You're just going round and round in circles. Yeah. It's like, what was that story? I can never remember the name of the guy who pushed the big, like, in, I don't know, an ancient myth about the guy who was pushing the rock up the hill, and then you get to the top and then it rolls all the way back down. That's what my love life felt. If anyone resonates with that image, please let us know in the chat.
Good image.
Those live. So Laura, what I'm really curious to understand is, like, why of all the different things that, you know, you mentioned some of the different avenues that are looked at in self-development, like, why self-image? Why were you so interested in that? Mm. And, you know, a little bit about your story and how has self-image, or the lack of a positive one in the past, impacted your own love life?
Mm. So for me, my relationship with myself and my self-image stemmed all the way back to teen years when I had an eating disorder and I struggled with anorexia nervosa, body dysmorphia, all of the kind of classic things, I guess, that you might hear someone struggling with in those early years, in those formative years. But what I now understand looking back, which is why I'm so passionate about this now, is that really what that was a lack of sense of self, which, let's be honest, as a 14-year-old teenage girl or teenage human, is really difficult. And it's a time in your life where things are so confusing. And I think you feel a lot older than you are, but you're actually just a child. And there's so much going on. You know, this was like the Kate Moss kind of era, right? There was all sorts of pressures and we didn't have any of the positive rhetoric that we now have and the access that we now have to kind of more healthy information. So for me, that really started my own sense of self-image journey, because I had to get to know who I was, my identity, my relationship with my body, with food, with what I wanted in my life so early on that by my early 20s, it was such a huge part of my life, really. Self-development, knowing who I was, understanding that. And interestingly, you know, my first sort of relationship, or my first proper relationship, was 19, 20 years old, where that was my first experience of romance and love. And, you know, that's still pretty young. But before then, because of how I felt on myself and being in that journey, I wasn't open to anything because that was so rocky. So that has informed my ability to form connections in all senses, no mind romantically. But that's really where that, I guess, passion came from knowing that the stronger you feel in you, the less likely and susceptible you are to things like eating disorders or addiction or falling into the wrong relationship, etc. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And it's interesting just thinking about my addiction. It was always around sort of sex and love addiction. It's weird because I don't identify as a sex addict, even though if you looked at my behavior back in the day, you'd be like, you'd think you look like one, love. But it was always, I was just trying to get love, trying to get attention. I was trying to get love. I was addicted to the drama. Mm. And that's something we don't realize. You know, when you're a teenager or in your early 20s, particularly, you're like, he's fit and I just really fancy him. You don't realize that, no, you're subconsciously hooked in and attached to this person because of X, Y, and Z. And like you were saying, because you don't have that strong sense of self. So looking at the flip side of it, now that your sense of self does feel and is so much stronger, how have you seen that positively impact your love life nowadays?
Mm. Well, what was interesting is that even though I've been on that journey, as you know, I came out of that 10-year relationship. First time we met Persia in person was at Amy's party. That was what, 18 months ago? That was a month after.
Just before my wedding, wasn't it?
Just for your wedding. It was a month after I'd come out of that relationship of 10 years.
Oh, so wow. I didn't realize it was so soon. Wow.
So soon. I was like in the place. Mm-hmm. So even though I'd done all of that work, what was so interesting is that was almost self-image round two. I had to go back to the foundations in so many ways, because being with someone for that long and then that ending really ruptured the sense of self that I had developed in that time. And even though I had all of these tools and had this relationship with my body and food that I didn't have as a teenager, I also didn't know my life without that person. So actually, in the past 2 years, I've been on an even deeper journey with that, what it means to be single and make your own decisions and be fully independent in your 30s. I was going into my 30th year, what that looks like for my work, what that looks like for my relationships. You know, I moved from London to Brighton. I completely changed my whole life pretty much over the course of 2 months. So it brought me into a far deeper journey and probably the biggest self-love, self-image, sense of self journey I've ever been on. And it's only recently that I've actually entered a new partnership after a very, very long hiatus. Well, not that long, but a while. And at that time, so sacred. Like, this is all very fresh and new. So this is like very vulnerable to even share.
But, I love that I'm like forcing you to do it live on air.
A few days ago. But that journey and that process, my God, like that was such a important time. Like that was probably the most transformative time of my whole life post eating disorder recovery. It was just like this journey of evolution and unraveling and re-raveling and really rediscovering myself, which I guess is where my business has pivoted slightly, because of the understanding and the deepening of that has allowed me to step into it and then create more work from that place as well. So yeah, it's taken a lot, which I'm sure we can dig into.
Yes. Well, it's really inspiring. And I think, you know, I think we can probably, majority of us can identify with, there is nothing quite like having your heart broken or going through a really big breakup, especially if you've been in a relationship for a decade. So it's like, you know, through your 20s. And then suddenly, and also you must have come out and be like, what the hell is this online dating shit? Like,
oh my God. I was like, what is this? Cyber world. It was so weird. I hated it at first.
Yeah. Hilarious. And we're going to talk a bit about that, because it really, you know, in the modern day, like in so many ways compared to like, say, medieval times, life is so much easier. In other ways, we're having to deal with things that the people in medieval times didn't have to deal with, because they would just, you know, try not to get trench foot and gout and shit, I imagine, like, you know, all sorts of ailments. Whereas it's almost like we have so much choice available to us. Again, hello, dating apps. There's just so many different ways that our decisions we could make. You know, there's comparison of comparing ourselves to other people. So this feels linked to self-image. But then there's also like compare. I don't know if anyone else does this. I'm sure you do. Comparing your current life and self to either you in a different time or you in a like made up time, like not even a real life. It's like, oh, my life could have gone this direction if I'd been in that relationship, or if I'd chosen that career, if I'd moved to that. Do you see what I mean? I'm always doing that. I'm like, I could be living all these different lives, but guess what? This is the one I am living. So I might as well learn how to show up for it really well and stop wasting my time in these fantasies of comparison that are all kind of quite a waste of time. Massive digression there. But actually, let's just touch on that for a sec. Self-image and comparison, because the truth is that we do live in such, I guess, you know, it's all about the optics these days. And by the way, the optics are usually bullshit anyway. And yet they impact us so much and our sense of self.
Yeah.
So what's that about and what do we do?
So interestingly, I don't know if anyone has seen the Black Mirror episode, which I feel like depicts this really well. So it's about social media. If you haven't, you need to go watch it.
Is it the one with the, where she's got like red hair, the main woman?
Yeah. And the likes and the, basically your entire status and who you are is defined by how liked you are physically online, etc. And it's really harrowing and we're not there, but sometimes I'm like, oh, are we there a little bit? Yeah. And I think the thing with comparison is I've never ever in all my years of doing this work, right back to when I worked in schools, Harley Street, all of those research kind of years, I never blamed anything on social media, because we can't, it's not that simple. You know, we can't just say social media is the cause of all comparison and everything, because it's actually to do with how we feel about ourselves and the responsibility we take for that. So if I use Instagram, I know that the way that I curate my feed, how much I spend on it, when I go on it, impacts how I feel about myself. If I'm going to open up Instagram first thing in the morning, flick through it, and I'm having a bad morning, obviously that's going to dampen my spirit, as opposed to going on an hour or two after doing my journaling and a workout and checking in with myself. So when it comes to comparison, we've got to understand, first of all, where is this really coming up for us? Where are we seeing comparison rise? For some people, it is social media. For others, it's in work. For others, it's in friendship groups. But the root of that is likely to be the same no matter where you get to. So if you're comparing yourself to someone, there's kind of two ways to look at it. You can look at it and say, okay, I'm comparing myself because there's something about this person or this thing that makes me feel less than. And there's a side of that which is doing the work on your belief systems, understanding who you are, understanding that we're all very unique and that someone else's whatever doesn't take away from who you are. And that takes a lot of mindset work, a lot of belief work, looking at the core stories, beliefs that you hold in your body, in your mind. The other side of comparison, which is more of a positive spin, is we can actually also look at things and go, can I turn that into inspiration? So if it's something that is, you know, a little bit less, let's say, toxic, so you're not watching a certain program with something that's completely unachievable or something that's not actually real, that's a different side to it. But if you take inspiration from someone's life or the way that they live, that can be a really beautiful way to soften into it and say, okay, I'm a human being. I'm obviously going to compare a little bit with other people and what's going on, but what can I take from that that feels good? So if you're comparing yourself to someone else's relationship, a really good exercise is to go, okay, what beliefs is this bringing up for me? What wounds, what stories, and what part of that could be really fucking epic for me to experience and really beautiful? And I think that allows you to take a stance of where there may need to be healing work, but also where there might just need to be a slight perspective shift and know that you can also have that. But to get that mindset kind of takes that belief and mindset work, which is where the self-image stuff is so key to not feeling that, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And there's something, a little tool that I share all the time whenever this topic comes up, because it's really helped me. And this is from my friend, Lucy Sheridan. You probably know her, the comparison coach. And she's got this little saying that whenever you feel triggered, like literally whether you're scrolling, like going into comparison, and it makes you, you know, sometimes just think, bitch, but it's like, no, I'm not really thinking that. Just I want what you have and I don't have it. I'm jealous. That's really
human. Human. Yeah.
But she says, say this out loud, good for you and the same for me.
Yeah, I love that.
It's so good, isn't it? It just cuts off the oxygen to that comparison. And it makes you, you know, it just owns the truth of it. It's like, yeah, do you know what? Good for her. Like, why shouldn't she have that amazing thing? And also own like, yeah, and I want a bit of that too, because then we reprogram the neural pathways. Instead of seeing that thing as being bad, which is what happens if we go, bitch, our brain just hears, okay, you know, amazing relationship.
Bad, wrong. Bad. Yeah, exactly. We're pushing it away. Exactly. Instead of going, oh, I can have that too, we're pushing it away, aren't we? We're going, oh, no, that's not for me. When actually it's, I'd love that to be for me.
Yeah. So all of you, that's the first little challenge we have. Whenever you notice yourself slipping into some comparison, just literally saying out loud, if possible, if not, under your breath, good for you and the same for me. And just notice what happens. When I do it, it's like that, I feel something. Like that, because I'm not indulging all that negative bullshit that's just that I'm projecting onto them and it's not fair. So I love that. Okay, so, and I just want to also acknowledge, Laura, what I love about what you said is with regards to comparison and social media is it's about to put me a big girl pants on. Stop blaming social media. You're the one who picked up Instagram. Instagram didn't like come into your room and like force itself into your like sight line. You picked it up. So take ownership of that and take responsibility. And that is so much what I talk about with my work when it comes to dating relationships. We are our own worst bloody enemy.
Yeah.
And so we have to take, and you know what? It's okay because everyone is. Everyone is. But when we realize, you know what? I always remember this line from the film Bridesmaids, and it's, not Meghan Markle. Wrong Meghan. The other one. Is she called Meghan? You know, the woman who brings, she's got all the puppies. She comes over to Annie. She's got the puppies.
Meghan McCarthy.
Yeah. I think that's her name. And she goes, you know what, Annie? You're your biggest problem, but you're also your solution. And I'm like, well, that's it, isn't it, in a nutshell? So this episode is all about how to rebrand your love life to make romance fun again, because I think, you know, I get so many DMs every single day from women who are just like, oh, I'm just not even, I'm just so over it. I can't do the online dating thing. Modern dating's just too much. So let's start with, when you say rebrand, when we say rebrand, like, what's that about?
So when we say rebrand, I think it can often, when we were playing with the title, we were like, does that sound too, you know, harsh. Essentially, it's just allowing yourself to evolve, to mutate, to change, and to reestablish the things that don't feel good to make room for the things that you want to invite in. So rebranding is just like the ability to change and evolve. And I'm such a mutator of life. I don't like staying the same for too long. I don't like staying stuck. So it just allows you that breath to be like, oh, okay, I'm evolving, I'm changing. I can shift things at any point, which is a really empowering thing if you're feeling stuck in your job, relationships, dating. And I think with dating, it's like at any point you get to take back control. Mm-hmm. And rebrand how it looks, you know, yes. Not a hinge profile, but actually how you feel internally.
Yeah.
And that's really freeing to know that you can do that.
It's fresh energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
When I think about like doing a rebrand of like, say, your website or your business or whatever, you know, it's fresh energy. It's like that served me then, but I've outgrown it.
Yeah.
And so much of what my work is about, it's like, it's shifting your perspective. Literally, I have clients being like, well, this can't work for me because of X, Y, and Z. And my favorite thing is just to, like, it's challenging those limiting beliefs that we, when we're stuck or miserable, we say statements that we, because it feels like it's a fact to us, online dating shit. No, it isn't. Your experience up until now has been that. It doesn't have to stay like that.
Yeah.
You know, I went from being a serial cheat, obsessive love addict, really messed up in my love life, working in a strip club, being sexually assaulted, like a lot of drama, a lot of chaos. I created all of that myself, from, you know, out of trauma. I live a very different romantic experience in life today. And that's why I'm so passionate. And I know for you, given how much you've healed and overcome throughout your life with your eating disorder, but also especially for, you know, coming out of a decade long relationship that you're in for the whole 20s.
Like that harder, that bit.
Really? Do you know what? I get it. But like,
so you had to be an adult as well, you know, like you're adulting. So that was a whole different thing. But yeah, exactly. Very life-defining moments.
Yes. So if you're listening and you're thinking, well, it's all very well for you guys to say, but my situation is different to X, Y, and Z. I just want to remind you, listen, I've coached women who are in their 60s, who were in a like 30-year toxic marriage, who've got kids, who are now in like, they had to go through the shit and do the work, but they're now in an amazing relationship. And I've, you know, there's so many different examples. Whenever we think, oh, but I'm special and different. My story is worse. And it's okay for you, but it won't happen for me. We've really got to check why we are so wedded to our victim story. And I know that can sound really harsh because sometimes, you know, we are genuinely, people go through some dark shit. But I always just remind myself, listen, if survivors of the Holocaust, I don't know if anyone knows, I was not expecting to talk about the Holocaust in this, I promise you I'll be brief, but it's just a perspective shift whenever I'm feeling like a victim. Corrie ten Boom, who watched all her family be slaughtered in concentration camps, actually went and forgave the Nazis who did it. And I just, that is my thing. I go, whenever I'm feeling like it's so hard for me, my life's shit, yes, everything's subjective. Yes, but, you know, feel my feelings, get support, don't sweep it under the carpet and do that thing where we're dismissing our pain and our stuff. But also just remember, like, I get to choose whether I stay here. And, you know, one of my other favorite sayings, shit stinks, but it's warm. Why do we stay in places that feel so crap? Because it's so familiar and it's comfortable. And yeah, we might hate it, but it feels safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
all that.
Let's just, for a moment, and it's perfect because this has been your recent lived experience, Laura. Let's talk about the unfun parts of dating. Like, if we want to make it fun again, let's start with, why is it not fun? And please, guys, live audience in the chat, love you just to write a few things of like, what is not fun about modern dating and relationships? So just share some of your stuff and we'll read them out. And Laura, what do you think? What about your own experience? What did you find hard about it?
I tell you a funny story to sigh off that was awful. And I went onto dating apps far too early and I was in Mexico. It was just before I came to Mallorca, actually. I was literally traveling everywhere, avoiding things probably. And I matched someone on Hinge and I had no idea how this app worked. I had not been on a dating app. So I was like turning 30, like, what is this? What do I say? Like, people, I kept accepting people like it was just hilarious. So anyway, I said to someone, I'm going to be at this cenote party, thinking nothing of it. They turned up. I was so shat myself. I hid under a wooden table at the top of this cenote. Our friend Sabi was like, oh, like, look there. And I was freaking out. It was hilarious. I was like, well, that was too soon. Avoided him the whole time. Just like absolute chaos. So I would guess that the most unfun part is if you do it too soon and when you're not ready, like, don't do that, because then it feels really not fun. If you feel like you're going through a difficult time and you are genuinely on it for some sort of validation, a hit, or just to like see maybe what's out there, but it's not from like a settled place, no fun, because it can feel weird and it can feel overwhelming and scary. And if you think about social media and how much energy you open yourself up to, I would say a dating apps can also feel like that. So if you go on it before you're ready to invest, as you were saying, the proper time, energy, and the intention, which we can maybe get onto, then it's going to be difficult. You know, the other things that are not fun, I'm sure people experience, are ghosting. Someone's normal and then suddenly they turn into a bloody weirdo. Dates that feel nothing like the person that you're talking to. In Brighton, funnily enough, me and my friends used to match the same people, which was kind of funny, but not that fun, because we'd be like, oh, great, like, we just have to check in, like, going on this date. Have you matched Todd? Like, Jesus. So those things are like not super fun. And I guess the inconsistency, the not knowing, we'll know this, but like when I meet someone, I'm like, I'm very all in with them. I want to know everything. I'm quite warm. I think it's in this career, but I've had to learn with dating, that's not always been a good thing. I was therapizing. I was probably giving them like, mommy, I'm going to heal you vibes. I had to really learn to scale that back, which felt very unnatural for me. So there was a lot of it that I didn't find fun, because it almost felt like I had to be very meticulous in a way that I'm such a, hey, you're my new best friend, let's hang out. That's my vibe. So to strip that back and change to have to for protection and boundaries didn't feel so fun for me. But I'd love to read some of these that are coming
through. Yeah, so, and I just, what you're speaking to there is that I don't even get to talk about nearly enough. Like, dating effectively is a skill set. It's one that can be learned. But why would we just know how to do this very contrived, weird thing? You know,
yeah,
like in the Jane Austen times, they understood that you had to learn the shit. Ladies went off to like finishing school.
Yeah,
not saying that's what we do, but why do we just know? You know, it's not obvious. It brings up all sorts of stuff. So if you feel like, well, I'm not very good at dating, firstly, know that you can learn it. It's a skill set you can learn, but also that it's like totally okay and totally normal for you not to be good at something that no one's ever taught you. Do you know what I mean? So let's see what we've got. Oh, we've got lots coming in. So we've got Becky saying no responses to initial messages or one message and then radio silence. For me, getting matches on dating apps, but then the conversation doesn't happen or you get slow faded, ghosted. The slow fade, it's almost even worse, because you can think just like, oh, just ghost me properly. Don't do the slow fade bullets. Really different vibe impression on messages versus in person. That's definitely what you said, Laura. Time wasting and ghosting. Now finding more suitable men on apps that not working out. It's not working out after a couple of months. Yes. So what I tend to see, pattern, it's bizarre, and I don't know what this is about, but it's like either not getting past day three or not getting past 3 months mark. Because around that is when it starts to become like, we're either gonna be in a committed relationship or not. Men rarely suggesting dates, but also not responding when I suggest them. Shallow conversation, endless chats, or the intention to meet the guy that lives far away and decides to see me, expect sex, time wasting, or just not responding after a match. Vicky's saying, I really take time to get to know, like, trust people. I feel like people write me off too quickly because I'm not all in the jump. Men who say they want one thing then change his mind and disappear, and I look crazy trying to find out why. Intentions changing. So a lot of these things, hot and cold communication. Men who you go on a date, it goes well, then after things get intimate, they say they're not after a relationship. Oh yeah, that is a big one. And that's why it's so important to be very discerning about who you share your body with. And I am telling you that from experience, because not me did I get the t-shirt there. You know, I didn't think anything of just sleeping around. I just didn't. And I thought that's just what you did back then. And even now. And actually, the truth is that men and women have very different physical responses to sex. Women release oxytocin, which is the cuddle hormone, helps us bond with the man. And men release dopamine, which is the pleasure hormone. So they might They might have fun and pleasure, but they don't necessarily feel bonded to you when they've slept with you. I read recently, even this week, something like a man can like impregnate up to like 360 times or something in a year, and a woman can only be pregnant once.
Damn.
Isn't that mental?
That's
isn't that
everything?
It's just absolutely crazy. And yet we're the ones who are supposed to be taking the pill. Yeah, it's absolutely not really fair, is it? Mm. Okay, so we have got all sorts of hard things there, hard things about modern dating. So, Laura, you have a task here. We both do. We will do this together. But
yeah.
How on earth can we start to make romance, to feeling fun, feeling relaxing, feeling exciting and inspiring, all the good bits with much less of the shitty bits?
I think, obviously, I'm going to say sense of self, but it's also about intention.
Yeah.
So, do you know what it is? Like, for something to feel fun, right, there also needs to be an element of grounding, of pacing, of slowness. And I think if I think back to some of my most colourful dating experiences that weren't all healthy, at the beginning, and I think this is important to maybe note, it was really fun, but it was also really intense and quite quick and full on. And for a person that is quite deep and loves to like go past the surface straight away and like live in the depths of someone's mind, that was so attractive and fun to me, but that didn't necessarily mean that it was fun and light and joyful in the way that we should be looking for early on. So I would say that if you want things to actually feel fun and good, there also needs to be an understanding around, well, what does that look like for you? And where are the green and red flags in that? There's a thing, I think that's a really important thing to remember, because for something to feel fun, there also needs to be a healthy level, something that feels like there's a good balance, like there's good communication, like there's good consistency for the fun to be there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's like what I'm hearing is, it's about, on the one hand, the fun, the spontaneity, all of those things, but there's also for it to be fun and not scare and tip over into scary and trigger the anxiety. So it's exciting as opposed to anxiety inducing. There has to be a really like a significant amount of safety.
Yeah, and consciousness in your behavior. So for example, fun, going for like cocktails and a night out and like really getting on, gelling, maybe not fun, getting absolutely wasted, not remembering what's happened and thinking with beer goggles that this person is way more amazing. Like that's very quickly tipped fun, spontaneity. I'm in my, you know, my power and in myself to, I have no control over the situation. So you put a dampener on it, but for the fun to really be there, it's like, okay, how self-aware are you? What does fun look like for you? Where are your limits? If you're on date one or two with someone, how well do you know them? What can that safe fun look like in a way that actually feels really good? Because fun is also feeling calm in between. Right? It's having the consistency, it's having the safety to be able to go, oh my God, we're four or five dates in and this is still so much fun. It's so light. It's still feeling really good. There's no, you know, big ruptures or anything difficult that's happened. I feel like we're going at the same level. That's also fun. So a slightly different spin on it, but to allow it to be fun, there needs to be that strong sense of self and safety built so that it feels good consistently rather than this quick hit of dopamine. Oh my God, that was really good. We've gone on all these wild dates. And then it's date three or four. And it's like, this isn't feeling fun anymore. It feels off. I didn't access what was actually going on because I had my beer goggles on or I was going too fast or whatever it is. So the fun part is actually allowing it to slowly pace out and taking your time to enjoy all of that journey along the way. And it probably isn't texting all the time every day and knowing everything about them, because that will very quickly take out the fun of getting to know someone, of the unraveling, which is really healthy and normal and what we should be looking for.
Yeah. So I'm hearing as well, it's delaying gratification. So instead of eating the whole cake in one sitting,
yeah.
Oh, that's such a good metaphor. Go me.
Yeah.
We're not eating the cake in one sitting, guys.
Yeah.
We're going to have a slice a day. Do you know what I mean? Or every other day. Whatever.
How much more fun is that though? You're not like sitting there with like blood sugars out the roof. Exactly.
Out everywhere. Yes. Yeah. Love that. Okay. That's what I want you to start thinking about. Your love life and dating experience like a cake. And also, I love to think of burlesque, you know, as a metaphor of like, it's slow. It takes its time instead of just like ripping your clothes off. And I don't just mean this like literally in terms of having sex. I'm talking about the energy with which it plays out. So taking your time. And I want you to think now, and if you can write this down, but just think about what, like, what for you constitutes fun and what for you constitutes safety in terms of romance and dating. And you can use examples from your life. Because what might be fun to me might be the opposite of fun, you know, to you. And safety. So just you need to know, what does safety feel like to me? Have I got any examples of like a guy that I felt really safe with in a dating life? I wasn't like feeling fucking anxious all the time. I just felt calm and grounded. It's interesting because I think about my husband Joe, and we met at a festival. So there was a lot of fun there. So in this dynamic, all the fun was already there because we met at a festival. But a lot of safety was built in, and guess how? By me, like, putting boundaries down.
Yep.
My time.
Boundaries are fun.
Yes. I know. Oh my God, I don't think I've ever heard someone say that. Say it again. Say what you just said again.
Boundaries are fun.
You heard it first. They don't feel like it when you first start setting them.
When you've never done a boundary
in your life. Like that was me. It's like, I love the expression, the first pancake is always shit.
Yeah.
So... And that's what, when you first set a boundary, like my first boundaries went, okay, I don't know if I told, I think I've shared this in one of my books, but I remember the guy I dated before Joe, fucking hell. I learned on the, learned the hard way. He told me on the first date, oh yeah, I'm sort of 8 years out of, I'm 3 months out of an 8 year on again, off again relationship. And she lived with me. He said it not quite as directly as that, which is why I managed to justify myself how this was really going to work well. And it did for a few months. And then when I went over to his house, her clean underwear was all folded up nicely in the spare room. And I was like, ugh. And this is when I was learning all this stuff that I now teach about setting boundaries. And for me now, I'd be like, it's not a big deal for me to just say. And if it had been Joe, because I felt very safe with Joe, I would have just been able to say, dude, what the fuck's this about? This doesn't feel good to me. With this guy, because I can now see that I was very self-conscious in front of him. Like, so many things were good on paper. The chemistry was great. All of that sort of thing. But I didn't feel like my true self. So talking about, like, you know, when you're like kind of, it's like you're performing a version of yourself. And it's all very pleasant. It's not anything's really bad. But because of that, when I set that boundary and just basically said, listen, that doesn't feel good to me. I'm not telling you to move them, but I don't want to be spending time in your house when that your ex-girlfriend's underwear there. So I'm happy to just go on dates and like that. And I genuinely thought, to be honest, I'd made peace with that, but I just assumed he'd be like, that's a bit weird. So yeah, I want to end it. I just assumed that's what he'd say. What he actually said was, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You're totally right. I've got rid of them. Like, that's just not cool. It's so interesting. And I don't know if you've experienced this, Laura, like how when you set a boundary and you're just honest, say like, that doesn't feel good to me. You're not blaming them. You're not attacking them. You're not shaming them. But when you set that boundary, whether romantically or otherwise, like how much self-confidence that generates, and like talking of self-image, you start to, it's because you respect yourself. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. It's that respect part. It's that part of like, and this is hard in dating, because depending on what part you're functioning from, and if we think about, again, like bringing it back to making it feel more fun, having that confidence and that self-respect is going to make it more fun, because you're not going to then be anxious and overthinking and kind of delaying your own boundaries or putting off what feels good for you to pacify the other person or to keep them there, because you're like, no, I know what I deserve. I know what I need. I know what I want. And you start speaking into that, and that will exactly that. It will skyrocket your confidence, and people respond to that. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that develops into something with, you know, the person you're dating, the respect they have for you and how that will turn out will be for the best. And it will make you feel so much better in the long term. So there's only really a win from that situation.
Absolutely. Danny's actually said something here that is really great. She said, my boyfriend refers to the ladder. I naturally wanted to climb up to the top, but we have to go slowly, step by step. I love that.
It makes it more fun.
Yeah, it does. Delay that gratification. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, just for anyone who wasn't paying attention, naughty you, but we want you to think about practical examples of what feels fun to you in the context of dating. Mm-hmm. but also what feels safe for you, so that you really have a, like, you know, it, like, I would write this down in your phone notes so that you know, like, what your personal boundaries are. And just, again, sometimes that means that you don't do what you want to do in the moment. Because I used to be like, oh, but I'm just a free spirit. And I just, like, I just live in the moment and I just do what feels right in the moment. But guess what? There's no maturity there.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a very childish perspective to just do everything you want to do in the moment. Can you speak into that a little bit? Like, in terms of self-image, like, there's, you know, we tend to be attracted to people who have, like, respect themselves, and who, there's something about the maturity. Again, it comes back to safety and fun. It's like there's a maturity, but also a playfulness.
Yeah. And I love that you brought this up, because I was talking about this again a lot this week. It's like recycling pleasure. But the inner child, there's a difference between fun and playfulness and a desire to be chosen. So if you find yourself, and I said this with a client this week, I actually said to her, she was putting something to me. I've had this client for years. We've grown through all sorts. And I said to her, it's interesting because when you say this to me, what I'm feeling from you is naughty schoolgirl. And she was laughing as I was saying it, because she was like, that's exactly what this feels like. Now, as fun as we can make of that statement, what's actually beneath that is inner child trauma, right? So the naughty schoolgirl, the need to be chosen. The inner child that wants to be chosen, it needs to be chosen and liked and accepted. There's a massive difference from that than feeling playful and silly and like yourself. There's an inner child that can be themselves and be open and vulnerable. And that's beautiful. And you can have that in those safe, loving connections. And you can have that in fun, like the silliness to play. But then there's the inner child that is scared and wants to be chosen and is desiring connection and needing that love that you spoke into. And there's a big difference between those two. And I guess what I would say is, if you think about a healthy unraveling or the ladder example, it might take a little bit longer for the inner child to come out, because that's quite vulnerable and you might not want to show that to someone you don't really know that well. So if that starts to activate immediately, you might want to think, oh, okay, what's this showing me? Am I feeling playful and silly and joyful with this person? Is this feeling good and fun? Or is this starting to feel like a bit of a game? Is it that I need them to choose me? Is this about acceptance? Is there a part of me that's obsessing over whether they like me, as opposed to thinking, do I even like them? Do I even like how they're treating me? So I would say there's a difference between the playful, the inner child, the silly that feels good, that we can have in adulthood, healthy, we love it, we need it, then the inner child that's wounded, wants to be chosen, wants to be seen and loved. And that's the big differentiation we want to have in those early formative days of dating.
Oh my God, I absolutely love that. I'd never really thought of it in that way, but that makes total sense. Mm. So another little challenge for you all is to remember, when you are out dating, that your inner child is there as well, and they need to feel, comes back to that safety. So again, you know what feels safe and what feels fun to you, like if you're really honest with yourself. And give some examples, when it's been the opposite. Like, what did not feel fun? What did not feel safe? And then they become your kind of, it's like your gauge when you're on a date and you're like, okay, this and this has happened, or they're doing this and this, they're really pushing me to go back to their house. That does not feel safe. And it definitely doesn't feel fun anymore, you know, because my safety feels compromised.
Yeah.
And it's like, if that's how this person's showing up at this point, not respecting your boundaries, how are they going to show up years into a relationship, you know?
Mm.
So Laura, I want to throw you in the deep end now, and you can say no, but I do feel compelled and I think you're up to the challenge.
Okay.
So before we take some questions for the floor, like, we could talk about this forever, but we need to slowly start wrapping up.
Yeah.
Would you be able to just guide us through literally like 1 minute, because this is, you know, people might be driving or podcast, you know, whatever, people might be not able to sit much longer, through just a little... A way that, I don't know, what am I trying to say? Like a little mini meditation process.
Yeah.
That's what, do you know what I mean? Around this stuff, just so people can check in. I don't know why, I just feel the moment has taken me. She knows.
Do we want to go in a child? Do we want to go playful fun in the adult? Do we just want to bring it all together and think about our current journey with ourselves and dating?
That. Okay. That last, whatever you just said.
Let's roll. Okay, so closing down the eyes, I'll invite you to. We're going to do visualization meditation, okay? And I want you to I want us to start by, well, first of all, just take some breaths. Obviously, you don't have too long for this. And if you're driving, please do not shut your eyes and take some breaths. Just did a car crash. It was very traumatic. So getting into a relaxed position, whatever that looks like, and just connecting inwards. And actually, what I want you to do is I want us to take what we've just been talking about, and I want you to invite in the inner child part of you that feels safe to be seen and safe to be vulnerable and that feels playful and whole and can be silly and loving and just feels really safe in its most authentic expression, okay, which is what I would desire for every child on this earth and my younger self too. I want you to allow them in and into the room and into the space in your heart right now. And I want you to imagine that with this sense of it, there's also your inner adult, the you now, the mature self, the wise self, the loving self. And I want you to imagine them integrating. And I want you to imagine that the more that your adult self can guide and lead and nurture and take care of this part, the more that part gets to be seen and witnessed and feel safe, okay? So together it's bringing in this beautiful sense of self that encompasses all of these parts, but guided and navigated through your adult self, your higher self, your most nurturing, loving self. And now I want you to imagine and vision you in partnership. For some of you, you might be able to see the person. They might be in your life already. They might be someone that you're calling in, that you're hoping to meet, that you will meet. And I want you to imagine showing up and being with this person with these integrated parts of you and imagining this dance between this safe, playful, vulnerable, expressive, authentic inner child and this wise, knowing, loving, self-respecting, boundaried adult. And I want you to imagine that if you could show up in that energy as you navigate and enter into your relationships or in the relationship that you might currently be in or easing into or wanting to attract, how that could feel. Who would you start choosing? Who would you start letting in? If you imagine these two parts dancing together and imagine that inner child at the forefront of your mind that you desire to be taken care of and respected and seen and loved and nurtured, who would you then let in? Who is in that picture? What kind of person are they? What values do they have? How do they treat you? How do they treat others? And how does that feel for those parts of you? And how does that feel in your heart? And I want you to just imagine yourself at some point in the future with this person, with their parts dancing with yours, coming together in this beautiful synchronicity of openness and love and connection and respect and boundaries and fun and joy, because your adult self has guided and navigated those parts of you that might still need nurturing and healing, but together they've been able to enter into a divine partnership, into a union based on love, trust, respect, boundaries, and all the joy and play that you could ever imagine. Just take some deep breaths in that space. Know it can be true for you. Breathe it into the body before you slowly and gently in your own time come back round.
Wow. I mean, talk about a pro. That was beautiful. That was so powerful. I love that, the integration of the inner child and the adult. And that's what, you know, it's a really unique perspective in dating. But that will set you apart. If you really, you know, practice that little process that Laura talked about, just even when you're, that Laura just guided us through, even when you're just, I don't know, driving or walking, not closing your eyes, but just feeling into those two aspects of yourself coming together, you will show up in your love life and in every area of your life so differently. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you, my darling. So I just want to check, because I believe we may have had a couple of questions sent through. And I want you guys now who are in our live audience, just think, have you got any questions for Laura or Laura and me about anything that we talked about today? So just while I see
our brains, I had a couple come through as well.
Oh, fab. Okay. Well, if you've got them to hand.
Yeah. Well, someone asked, we've touched on this, but perhaps we'll go into it a little bit more. If you are an avoidant, or, you know, kind of feeling more into the avoidant energy, how to overcome self-sabotage, avoidance, trusting again. I thought that was one of the questions I got that was really good. And that's definitely a journey I was on, being a classically anxious attached, coming out of a relationship, going more into avoidance. So I think this is a really good one to touch on, because I think we talk more about the anxious, I would say, in dating than avoidant, maybe for women anyway.
Yes, yes. And actually, mine was primarily avoidant, definitely. Yeah.
Interesting. Do you want to share on that first then? Do you want to touch on that a bit?
Yeah, well, sorry, I'm going to be really honest. I was just looking at another question. So I wasn't fully listening. I was half listening, which is really, really bad for the podcast host. I was multitasking and both. So can you just sum that up again?
Really, yeah, quickly. So if you're leaning into more avoidance when you're starting dating or on a dating journey at any point, how to overcome the self-sabotage of that and learn to trust and be more open again.
Okay, so really simply, baby steps here. Yeah. The awareness is the first step. It's just being aware. Oh, gosh, I think I might be slipping into a bit of avoidance. And I see this particularly with career-focused women who they're like, right, I really want to prioritize dating. But they just, it's the bottom of the pile constantly. And it's not just about the actual practicalities of like responding on dating apps or to people who are texting you and asking on dates or going on dates, whatever. It's just the energy of not really wanting to be seen and feeling like very, you know, I'm independent woman, I'm successful. I do, and it's like, you don't want to let people in because it's really scary. You might have had your heart broken, but the romance, there's so much that we can't control with it. Really, that's same as life. It's just a mirror of life. But we really feel it when it comes to romance because another person is involved. So I would say just start to become aware about, oh gosh, you know, I'm noticing myself going a bit avoidant, and try and start to become clear about what the trigger might have been. Like, what was it that caused you to go into that place? And to be honest, the thing that will serve you the most is to get accountable, to go and connect with other women who are doing this work. You know, there's women right now on this live call. You can go and, you know, there's so many places that you can connect with other women who are on this journey. So go to my Instagram and you'll see other women who are in the same place commenting, etc. And put yourself out there and say, like, oh, this has changed my life, is having accountability buddies. And it sounds a bit grim, but I catch myself and I call myself out when I'm going into that avoidant behavior. And I just do a quick voice note to my accountability buddy. And it really has changed my behavior because I've become so much more conscious of it. And then when you're conscious of it, you're bringing that unconscious to the conscious, then you can make different choices. But I don't want to get into what you then do because that's a whole other episode and we have to keep this a little bit shorter. Mm. But that is a great place to start. It's just the awareness. Amazing. Yep. Leonie's saying the book Attached is great for attachment
stuff. Very good.
I totally agree. Did you have another one, Laura?
I think just what I would add to that is just about leaning in when you want to lean out. And I would say what you just described was me up until about 3 months ago. I had various experiences in dating. I had quite an intense one that took me to the depths and then back again. And all of that kind of led me into this thing of like, I genuinely feel good on my own. And I did. That's the thing. I loved that period so much, but it became an identity. I was becoming hyper independent. I was becoming so career focused. I would do all these visualizations, future scripting. There would be nothing about a partner in there ever. And I was like, oh my God, that's wild. That's, you know, I kind of got, I had pride on that. I was like, I don't need anyone. I love that it's not prioritization, but I was also blocking and not allowing. So if you're leaning out that far, I would say maybe that's a slight trauma response, and how can you lean in a little bit more, because we're here to relate and be with others and connect, you know, whatever stage that is. So just try and lean in a little bit more and see how that feels.
Yes, I completely agree. Love that. Lean in when you want to lean out. Mm-hmm. So I've got quite a few questions, messages, but I'm just going to ask one that feels relevant for this conversation and then open up to Thor. And if we haven't got any, then we'll start to wrap up. So someone asked, meeting people in real life, not apps, would be a great one. And I'm a girl for that because I met my husband at a festival. I always go, like, festivals great because mainly your phone signal shifts, so people actually look at each other a lot more at festivals, and obviously you've got the fun there, it's all taken care of. That's where you have to really practice boundaries and safety when you're at a festival, of like, not getting too carried away. That was a big part of it for me. So festivals are great. Like, honestly, this sounds, again, basic bitch 101, but going and doing things that require you to physically be there, like getting out of the energy of being in your house in front of Netflix scrolling. Go and join some sort of club, do a hobby. And it's not even about, all right, because that's where your husband's going to be. It's just about, it's an energetic thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Just to get out there, it's building your confidence. Like, I once gave out my number in a crystal shop. We went on one date, the date was gorge, never saw him again, but it was a great experience. It boosted my confidence. He messaged.
Yeah.
You know, I've met people, you know, when I was dancing, which I'm obsessed with, like, you can meet people everywhere. Some of them were through Instagram. Like, a lot of the people I did go on dates with weren't through Hinge, but I had to be in an energy of like, why not? You know, I was with my friend and she was like, just leave your number. So I went up and I was like, I love the whatever, the rose quartz, gave me my number and then just ran out, lol. But you know, it was a great experience. It was fun. It boosted my confidence. It showed me that that was possible, that you could do that. I also much prefer real life connection, but you also have to put in the effort that you desire.
Yes.
So if you want to do that, you have to be doing that. You know, if you want to meet someone that's not, you know, someone that lives in the pub all day, stop going to the pub and expecting to meet someone there.
Yeah.
Go and do hobbies, go and spend time in places, smile, engage, interact. If you have a dog, bonus. Grab someone.
Oh yeah, dogs are so good.
You borrow Belle, if anyone lives in Brighton, she's great. She's a magnet.
Magnet, that's what I call dogs. So good. The Brits particularly, we love our dogs. Yeah. Yes, I think you absolutely touched on everything there. I love the idea of old school. And I've had a guy do this to me on the train before, just put his number, like, yeah, come up, just, like, a little that bit of paper, cool. So I didn't know it was his number, just gave me that. And I was like, and he just smiled at me and got off the train. It was so sexy. There's no reason
you
can't do that.
And it's fun. That's really, that, honestly, that's really fun. It's like main character energy. If we want to bring it back to some fun, just play. If you don't hear from them again, so what?
You will never, like, who gives a shit?
They, you know what I mean? If they don't know, like, then there's no sweat. Tell yourself they were married. That's all cool. You move on to the next one. You go to another crystal shop. Like, just play a bit with that at that point. You can play.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what we want you to be doing. Go and write your number on a bit of paper and pass it around trains and crystal shops and let us know how you get on. I love it if someone meets their husband or wife from that. Please let us know, because that's brilliant. Okay, so we're going to start wrapping up now. Before I ask Laura my final few questions, just a heads up for anyone on the live, we have a few spaces over the next couple of days to book a complimentary consultation with me to see where you're at in your love life. And if I can help. So more info in the sign-up link that I will pop in the comments in a moment. And if you're listening to the podcast episode in the future, then we will pop that link in the show notes too. Okay, so I'll pop that link now. While I ask you, in fact, I'm going to do that now before I ask you, because as we've learned, I can't do two things at once. So my love, so you can just look at this link. There's loads of information and stuff on it. So just open it, because it will disappear when it closes. Down. Okay, Laura, final question. This is the lightning round, inspired by that episode of Friends. So don't overthink it and just say whatever comes up. What love life advice would you give to your 15-year-old self?
Oof. That there's going to be many different versions of it, just like there's going to be many different versions of you. And every single one will be a lesson and a blessing, but one will eventually be the biggest blessing. So allow it to unfold, trust it, but always come back to the relationship that you have with you.
I love that. I wish I'd known that when I was 15. Stop investing everything into these boys and just get some focus on yourself.
Get good with you. And yes. Like, they'll all commit. No, I'm joking. You know, the right ones will come hither.
The shitheads will fall away and the right ones will step forward. They really do. When you prioritize your relationship, that's what happens. You will get some no's, but that's good, because they're disqualifying themselves.
Yeah.
You know, that you're not going to be a match for them. And it's better to know that early on before, you know, you're a year into a relationship with, not even a relationship, situationship with someone who treats you like shit. Doesn't want the same things. Love that. What's one thing people may be surprised to know about you?
Oh, I struggle with vulnerability. And I'm literally a teacher of feeling your feelings, and I feel the hell out of them. But definitely as well, since that breakup, being vulnerable is not like my fave thing unless you're like really, really know me. I prefer to be the one people come to, the one that people confide in. And it's, yeah, it can be uncomfortable for me to be in my true vulnerability.
I really relate to that. It's like with some people, it's just, even like when you meet them straight away, you just feel completely safe and to open up. And then there's other people that, and it's not nothing that they've necessarily done wrong, but they might remind you of like someone at high school who bullied you or who's, do you know what I mean? And that you just feel like very self-conscious and very sort of, I don't know, God. And what happens with me when I feel like that is I just don't stop talking. Just don't stop talking. But it's a nervous thing.
Yeah.
So it's not really being vulnerable. Like I can be saying all the stuff and actually it's oversharing. And I used to think that was vulnerability, but actually it's not. It's a way to mask it because it's not coming from a grounded place. Does that make sense?
So true. You can be like in it and not have to actually give all of yourself either.
Yes, absolutely. So before my final question, where can people find out more about your work? Is there anything in particular? We will make sure that we put all the links in the show notes as well.
Yeah, amazing. Over on the gram, of course, this is Laura Phelan. I use LinkedIn a little bit if you're women in business. Website, you can find through my link tree. What have I got coming up? I've got some openings for my one-to-one over the next few months. I've got a free challenge / workshop that was pushed back due to car crash healing, which will be over the next few weeks. But that's going to be probably one of the best ways to connect with me because it's going to be all around your self-worth and sense of self and how to essentially rebuild that for the rest of the year. So follow me on Instagram. You'll see all of that coming up. And that's just going to be a really beautiful way for us to dive into all these parts of self that we've gone through today and how to change that and reactivate that for the year.
Beautiful, beautiful. So yes, again, this is Laura Phelan on Instagram. I've done a lot of radio in the last week. I did 12 back-to-back radio shows last week. Okay. And it was fucking great. I mean, I felt like everyone's like, were you knackered? I was like, no, I felt like I'd done 5 lines of cocaine. I felt great. I was just quiet. I've been really working on my radio voice. It helps to have quite a phallic microphone, I've noticed. Just side note that you didn't need to know or want to know. Get yourself a phallic microphone and talk into it and you feel maybe that's my new way to get my rocks off or whatever the expression is. Anyway, let me ask you your final question. I think I clearly need to go and have a nap. I'm absolutely bloody shattered.
Well, we love
phallic microphones. So Laura, final question to you. I just want to say you've been an absolutely amazing guest. I've really got so much value from this, particularly what you were talking about in terms of the inner child and the fun, you know, and the dating that were in the context of dating. I think that was a real like penny drop moment for me. So final question, what is your number one piece of advice for any single woman listening to this right now who's thriving in her career but really struggling in her love life? What would you say?
When you let the right people or person in, because it goes for your other relationships as well, it will only enhance the things that you're worried about losing. Your independence, your success, all of the things you have built will be enhanced and encouraged by the right people / person. So don't fear it being taken away from you. That still gets to be part of you and that doesn't get dampened. That can actually be accelerated when the right people or person is around you. So let it in. It might actually feel really good and you deserve it. You deserve to have that alongside all of the success that you desire.
I love that. What a beautiful note to end on. Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you to everyone who showed up live and thank you to everyone who is listening on the Love Is Coming podcast. Whenever you may be listening to it. Big love. And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope this episode served you and gave some practical insights and strategies around the next steps in transforming your love life from the inside out. Do come and let me know over on Instagram what resonated for you the most and why. I am at Persia Lawson. And if you want more tips and tools on how to become a vibrational match for the powerful, committed relationship that you deserve, check out my book, Love Is Coming, as well as my programs and coaching containers over at persialawson.com. This
This website is also linked in this episode's show notes. And if you got value from this episode, I'd be so grateful if you'd like, subscribe, share, and or leave a quick review. This helps the podcast rank higher so it can reach other women who want or need the support. And to have your question answered, send it over to podcast@persialawson.com and we'll get to it ASAP. Until next time, I want you to remember that love is coming for you. But in the meantime, it's your responsibility to stop looking outside of yourself for the partner you want to get and start looking inside of yourself for the partner you want to be.